Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Giovan Bronckhorst has got the stats of a legend. He played for Rangers, Arsenal, won the Champions League with Barcelona in 2006 and retired at Feyenoord. He has been in three World Cups. Only Sneijder, Van der Sar, Rafael van der Vaart and Frank de Boer have played more games than him with the Dutch national side. And in fact, he was the captain of the team that lost the final against Spain in 2010, his last professional game. Soon after, Gio assisted the Dutch under-21s and Feyenoord before becoming the manager in 2015. He won the KNVB Cup in his first season and the club's first Eredivisie title for 18 years in 2017. But what makes him fascinating to listen to is the fact that he has been managed by some of the biggest coaches in the world and has played with so many good players that his best 11 of footballers he has shared a changing room with is probably the best ever. Just listen to his choice later on. What is more, he's a good storyteller, a nice guy, and someone who right now is working his way to be not just a respectable manager, but if things go his way, one day he wants to be seen good enough to be the Arsenal boss. This is Inside Football with Guillem Balaguer, and today, Gio Van Bronckhorst.
Nash Sneijder, 35 yards out, quite central. De Zeeuw once more strokes it out to Van Bronckhorst. Good possession from Holland. Van Bronckhorst! Oh! What a goal from the skipper! Fully 35 yards! A beautiful strike from Giovanni Van Bronckhorst!
What a goal! One of the best goals in this tournament so far.
Kaczelskis, Wallace, Van Bronckhorst can score! Giovanni Van Bronckhorst! Simply the best, often echoes around Ibrox. Now, you know why.
And this is Henri, and this is Van Bronckhorst. Van Bronckhorst dive! Oh, it's a super goal! Giovanni Van Bronckhorst rings in the new year for the champions at the Clockend Highbury.
Now, you had a fantastic football career, and you mixed with so many talented players. And I've got an 11 that you've chosen, your favourite 11. And I would like to go through all of them, including left-back Gio. That's the left-back you've chosen.
Of course, of course.
And tell us who they, what they're like and what stories that their names bring to you and how they help you along the along your career. Starting with on goal, you could have chosen Victor Valdes. But he went for Van der Sar.
Bissingwa now will whip the ball in. Torres with a header. Oh, a parried save by Van der Sar. Wonderful save by the Dutchman.
Of course, I knew Edwin throughout my career as an international player with Holland, and we always clicked well. You know, when we were together, and so for me, you know, he was a very nice person, but also a very good goalie. You know, I think he had a great career. The beginning, you know, with Ajax, you know, winning the Champions League, you know, have a great career with Fulham, Juventus, short spell, but after that, you know, Manchester United, you know, for me, you know, he was a good goalkeeper, but also a good and nice person to be around with.
So, what story would you would remember if you have to describe on this other friend?
During 2006, I think it was in Germany, the World Cup. You know, we had Van Basten was the coach, and then we didn't. If someone would turn up late for breakfast or dinner or or a team meeting, you know, he wouldn't give any fines, but you had to tell a joke in front of the whole team.
Right.
So, and no one wants to do that, because you have the possibility to tell a joke and then no one understands the joke. So I remember one time with Edwin when he was telling a joke, and then afterwards he explained to me that the joke was already finished, but no one laughed in the room, and then he extended the joke with another joke. So, but it went all wrong, and then, you know, it's just one of the moments where you saw Edwin out of his comfort zone, because telling a joke wasn't one of his best aspects. But you know, for me, it was funny, because you know, everyone had to do it sometimes, and for Edwin, it was just a time where you could see that he was feeling really uncomfortable.
Right, the back four is Puyol, Stam, Koeman and Gio. So let's start with Puyol.
In comes the ball, ahead of the one's goal! It's Carlos Puyol who gives Spain the lead! And it's one that takes Spain to the brink of their first ever World Cup final! Carlos Puyol!
A great person, a great defender, and we were... you know, sharing a room with each other, you know, with the training camp when we're in the hotel. But, you know, if you have someone who brought character into a team, you know, it was Puyol. You know, he was also a real warrior. You had to pass him two or three times because he always came back. And for me, it's an example how a professional player should be. And for me to be... playing with him, you know, at Barcelona, you know, it was the perfect match.
Piqué always says that he doesn't allow him to fall asleep, so he's got Puyol next to him, and there will be 4-0 up, but yeah. Still, you know, we will just push you for the 90 minutes. But you were at the other side of the pitch, so you probably didn't get that kind of.
Yes, yeah, so I think sometimes he played on the left because we had Puyol and Marquez, and then Puy would play on the left,
right.
Central. So. You know, he was next to me, but he's also one of the guys who will keep you sharp. And you could do 100 things good, and if you do one thing bad, you know, then he will scream in your ear. But you know, he was always busy to control the game, to make sure that the shape is good from the team. And if you're so for me, it was you know, perfect, because I knew, you know, with him behind me, I always had cover. So I had a good partnership with him. So I knew when I had to get close to my opponent, and I knew when the ball went, you know, into the space that Puyi would cover me. So it's just the interaction what I had with him, but also with all the other players that makes you a great team.
It was, I remember him telling off Thiago in a celebration of a goal, Thiago being half Brazilian, celebrating a Brazilian, well, you don't do that at Barcelona, you don't do that at Barcelona. Puyol coming into him, you don't do that at Barcelona, because
no.
He was kind of dancing or something.
Yeah.
But you are, you're not Brazilian, but you are funny, you like enjoy yourself. Did you have to stop yourself sometimes in front
no,
of Puyol?
No, because, you know, I knew when I had to, you know, when I had to be... on top form, and you know, I was never joking in on the pitch. You know, when I'm out of the pitch, you know, in the locker room and in the hotel, you know, of course, I think it's also time to be funny, you know, to make fun of each other. And but in the game, you know, Puyi would have never told me to not to be funny or to concentrate on the game, because I always had that.
How serious is Stam? Is he as serious as he looks?
I think he's serious because, as you said, as he looks in the games, I think he had the same character as Puyol. You know, always there, always make sure that, you know, his opponent didn't score, and make sure that he's keeping everyone sharp around him. And one of the, I think, the best defenders we had with Holland. And of course, his career, you know, at the time I was playing with RKC, you know, I played against Stam. He was he was playing for Cambuur. And then he had the career went also really fast with him. He went to Willem II, then to PSV, Manchester United, you know. So, you know, it was very, very good to play with him as well on the national team.
Stam the friend. bring him to us. What is he like? A story that you remember from him?
He was also serious outside of the on and off the pitch. He was yeah, he wasn't.
So I can imagine you trying to get him out of that serious phase off the pitch.
Yeah, but
all the time.
Yeah, no, not him, because he was very, very serious. But no, we had a good, you know, in the time he was playing, 98, he was one of the starters, you know, and I was a substitute, so I wasn't really around him a lot, you know. I also had my the players around me, but it didn't involve Stam. Well, of course, in 2 years later, in the Euros 2000 with Holland, you know, we had a great team. I was playing left back and Stam was central with Frank de Boer. So, but you know, he's one of the guys, you know, he was just showing up for work, do everything he could in a really good way. And then that's all he needed.
How much do you need players like that in every team?
It is. Yeah. You have to have the right balance in the team. You cannot have 10 Stams, 11 Stams in one team. The mix had to be, you always have a player who you knew who would change games and win games for you. And every team needs a player like that, maybe one or two. You need players who will make sure that the shape is fine and the balance is good. And it's nice, because if I look all the great teams I played in, and now as a manager, it's really nice to work hard and to create teams where everything falls into the right place.
Was Koeman one of the first midfield centre backs?
He was, of course, you know, with at Barcelona, and but also in Holland, he was a defender who was very comfortable on the ball, really comfortable, and with his passing and his vision. I think he's one of the defenders where you saw, oh, when he's got the ball, you know, something will happen. And I remember, because I was on holiday in Spain, where the news came that he was transferred to Feyenoord, and I couldn't believe it, because I had the chance to play with one of my idols, you know, the 88 Holland team. You know, it's amazing, that team, and I had the chance to play with one of them. So the moment he came in, of course, you know, I was looking up to Ronald, and because of who he was and what he achieved. But I remember at that time, I every minute I could spend with him on the pitch, out of the pitch, I was always around him, because I wanted to learn from him.
One advice that you kept from him, or one idea, something that you learned from that you stuck in your mind?
No, I think what he saw was that I had the talent, and he was one of the first who told me, you know, if you go on like this, you can play on the highest level. He saw the potential I had, and you know, I remember training a couple of times a week, free kicks with Ronald. You know, just looking how he plays the ball. And And it was funny, because in games he always said to me, come with me with the free kicks. And then every game, and then I was, the first games I was asking, who's going to take it? You want to take it? I take it. And Ronald always said, I'm taking it. and then later, you know, I didn't bother to ask, because I knew that he would take them.
So come on, England, let's see if we can hold it out again. Again it's Ronald Koeman. Again the problem is there. Again it's a critical moment. He's going to flick one. It's in.
This is Inside Football with Guillem Balaguer and special guest Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. Up next, we find out what it's like to play with Xavi, Andrés Iniesta and Patrick Vieira. This is Inside Football with Guillem Balaguer and special guest Giovanni Van Bronckhorst.
Barcelona coming forward with Iniesta, and now with Xavi. Xavi inside the penalty area, right-footed ball cannons off of the defender and goes beyond Almunia and into the net.
Messi on the edge of the area, right-footed shot from Iniesta! Andrés Iniesta has scored for Barcelona to break
break Chelsea hard.
Vieira to make it 3-0 over Richard Wright. Easy peasy for Patrick Vieira, who celebrates down under the clock end.
Xavi steps up and he scores. Low right footed into the corner. And Barcelona are surely on their way to the semi-finals of the Champions League already.
Your team is 4-3-3, of course, being Dutch. And the midfield is Xavi, Patrick Vieira and Iniesta. Let's start with Xavi. Xavi now is about to start his career as a manager.
Yeah.
And he talks about what he believes is the way to play football, almost as if it's the only way to play football. Did you have a lot of football conversations with him and you could see that he had a clear idea what he wanted on a football pitch?
Well, of course, we were talking about the way we played, you know, training tactical, and you could see, you know, that the players from Barcelona were developed, you know, as a Barcelona player. You could see, and I think Xavi and Iniesta were both similar players. I always saw Xavi, you know, as the link-up player from defense to midfield and then going forward, and Iniesta exactly the same, but from midfield to the attack. You know, and that's why I have them both in my team, and it's amazing because, you know, I when we were training at Barcelona, we do a lot of 4v4 games, you know, short games where you had to man mark, and I was always, you know, I was playing against Xavi or Iniesta or Messi, you know, so for me the trainings were exactly sometimes tougher than games because I was playing against the best and I could develop myself. And what I always remembered about Xavi and Iniesta, that their ability to control their area, to control the space around them. They exactly knew where the space was, where their opponent was. So you could not get the ball from them because it looked like they had eyes in their backs. And that's one thing I remembered playing against Xavi and Iniesta at training.
Personally, Xavi is perhaps more of a vocal leader. Yeah. Iniesta is the quiet leader that does it on the pitch. Is that how you will differentiate them?
Yeah, because Xavi was one of the captains, you know, at Barcelona, and it was always, as you said, he was talking a lot. You know, he was also on the pitch, you know, you know, doing his work, but, you know, outside of the pitch, you know, he was also making fun, and so he was more. His presence was more than Iniesta at that time because Iniesta also was quite younger. But, you know, I really enjoyed playing with both of them.
Were you aware that Iniesta, who's told his story, personal story, in a book, but he's also spoken about it, that he's gone through difficulties, depression, and moments where he could not find happiness? Were you aware of any of that?
I don't think you are aware of what goes on in minds of your colleagues. Sometimes you have an idea, of course, but at that time, you know, Iniesta was he had players in the squad who could play as well. You know, you had Van Bommel, you had Deco, you had Xavi, so Iniesta wasn't, in my time, a starter. You know, he was on and off the first 11 and sometimes play, you know, on the wing like he's doing now. You know, he's changing a lot his positions. But, you know, I can remember, I can understand, you know, when you're not playing or maybe in your personal life, things will happen that you are sometimes keep things to yourself and close to your chest. But I think every player has moments where maybe he's struggling a bit, not getting the minutes he want. But I think personal life, you know, in players' performances is a very important factor.
It's a bit surprising because you come from a culture, the Dutch culture, where talk, it's something that's very common. You talk and talk and talk and talk. I imagine it's more tactical talk or what happens on the pitch that beyond that?
It is, yeah. It is because, you know, I think, you know, Catalan people are very, very close to the family. So it's for me, you know, the first years, only in my third and fourth years, I would have Catalan friends, because they, you know, they invited me into the inner circle. It's very hard to get into the inner circle with Catalan people. But once you're in the circle, you know, you're one of them. Mm-hmm. And as you said, in Holland, we are more outspoken, more extrovert, talking with everyone. And that's totally the opposite, I felt, in Spain.
In fact, you're famous when you join in the national side to actually argue things, sometimes publicly as well. But take us to one of those conversations in the camp when tactics are discussed. Does everybody have a say? Does the manager get involved? Are they relevant conversations?
With Barcelona?
No, with the national side. Because you're famous, Holland, famous for...
But it is. I guess when... I experience the same now as a coach. Because we are... the Dutch are always, you know... We say what we think. So, and many times, you know, with the national team or with now as a coach, I talk with the players about situations, and everyone has his opinion, and we tell their opinion. Sometimes you think, well, maybe it's better to not say your opinion because the coach says something, and I like that also, because it's creating a really dynamic environment where players feel comfortable to talk about situation instead of, you know, doing what the coach says. But also, you know, I need to have feedback from my players, and maybe they feel something else on the pitch, and then I have to think about that as well. So,
in fact, that's the football culture in Holland and in Spain as a consequence. You try the players to understand the game by talking about it, by explaining, by letting them give you feedback.
Yeah.
So when they take decisions on the pitch, they're based on
it is because rationale. You know, of course, you know, we had we had it with the national team and also with Barcelona. We had a system we believed in. Everyone knew what to do, and it didn't matter what the opponents did. We all knew what was the system, what we had to do. When I had to drop a bit deep, when I have to be a bit high up. And I think that is that's what you want from your players. You know, give them tools in the game where everything can happen, but they are comfortable in changing maybe a bit shape, maybe the way they play to overcome and to react well on the opponent.
There's two ways to look at the crisis of Dutch football now. One is the coaching hasn't been so good and the players leave too early. Two, you are a small country. It's only normal that you have a generation which is spectacular, and then just disappear, and then you will come back. I mean, which one do you buy?
I think it's a bit of both. I think we are still a small country. You know, I think we had we have a very good academy set up in Holland, and maybe in the maybe one of the best in Europe, in the world, many years ago. But, you know, the countries around us, they are developing as well. So I think that the
have you fallen asleep, you think?
No, we don't fall asleep, because I think we are, people, Germany, Spain, you know, they kept developing. And so in that way, the gap is getting smaller and smaller. And now maybe those countries are ahead of us. You know, if you see England, how many great academies they have, Spain, Germany, you know, is very strong with a lot bigger country. And if you combine that with big clubs, you know, buying all our big talents from the age of 16, and maybe a generation who is not filled with the talent we had before, I think that's why you are not involved in big tournaments now two times in a row.
In the midfield is Patrick Vieira, of course, which in your midfield will balance the playing ability of Xavi Iniesta with his strength. He's the general. What kind of leader was he?
He was also a leader by the things he did on the pitch. Patrick was not very very quiet and maybe a bit like myself, you know, quiet, but sometimes the things he said, you know, really, really counted. And you knew when Patrick was saying something or was angry that something was really wrong. And, you know, I always had good contact with Patrick, you know, also when he became coach. And, you know, I really love to see him now developing as well as a coach and you know, make sure he is enjoying the life as a coach now.
What kind of conversations do you two have now as coaches?
Oh, we're talking about everything, you know, about training, training staff. You know, I remember when I was in Manchester, he was still at Manchester at the time, in the youth, that we went out for dinner and talked about general things. And, you know, of course, he's now coach of New York FC, where the technical director is one of my best friends, Claudio Reina. So we have the connection there. And so it's nice to see, because he was also really a nice person. And
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You want to be around nice people.
Magic ball from Bergkamp to Patrick Vieira! The captain, fittingly, gets the goal that might make history.
Coming up next on Inside Football with Guillem Balague and special guest Giovanni van Bronckhorst, we discuss one of Holland's greatest ever strikers, just what it's like making the transition from player to manager. You are listening to Inside Football with Guillem Balague and special guest Giovanni van Bronckhorst.
It's Jurgensen who's onside, right footed ball inside the penalty area. Bill Hannah! 1-0 final! Manchester United's defensive resistance is broken. Manchester United 0. And it's Mourinho's first game in this competition for 13 years. Going to end in defeat.
You were 4 years as an assistant before you actually made the jump as a number one.
Yeah.
Two things about that. 4 years as an assistant, that's not usual. Normally it's like 1 year, I'm Gio, give me a job. And a lot of former players go through that.
Yeah.
But you felt that 4 years was necessary for your development.
I think it was a good thing to do. Because the first year I was... actually, after the World Cup final, 4 weeks later, I was already at Zeiss, you know, learning for my coaching batches. And but I think the experience of being around Koeman as a coach and later Fred Rutten, you know, for me it was good, because I could have developed my the way of communicating with the players, you know, watching games, making analysis, making training drills, watch the opponents, watch my own team, developing the players, you know, and for me just the time didn't felt right to become head coach, and I knew, you know, when the feeling was there, I have to do it. And eventually, for me, it came in 2015, where the coach only signed for a year, written, and we knew in March, the club knew in March that he wouldn't sign a new contract. So they were looking for a new head coach, and you know, of course, look within Feyenoord who would be available and who would want to be coach. And I think from that moment on, I had a feeling inside that this was the time, you know, the time to step in and to become head coach and to give it a shot.
That's the magic of being a manager, isn't it? That there is nothing written ahead of you. You're the one putting the rules and creating the path, and you know, if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. But you have already put the foundations, enough foundations to be able to get more better answers than wrong answers. Is that how you feel right now in your career?
Yes, I think so, because it's only my third year as a manager, and you know, I really enjoy and sensed success, you know, especially for my club Feyenoord, which was the club where I was playing since I was 7 years old. So it's really great to be champion with my club, because as a player I wasn't champion, and now as a coach I was a champion. You know, I won the cup final, we won the charity shield. It's a very great period in the history of my club. So, and to be head coach of this team, you know, it's a really it's an honor for me.
You won with Feyenoord, you won as a player with, say, Arsenal, Barcelona, but in the case of Arsenal, why did they win? What brought them to win?
I think we had, you know, in my time with Arsenal, I think it was the same. You know, in every team I played in who had success, you know, you had everyone, you know, on the same page. It's very difficult because you have your starting lineup, you have your substitutes who will sometimes go in, sometimes not, some players who don't come in, and you as a coach have to make sure that it remains a team, and it's sometimes it's the task of a coach of explaining and telling players what their role is. And they have to make sure that they accept the role. Sometimes it's very hard because you can only start 11 players. You will disappoint 16, 17 players. And sometimes the energy will go more to your substitutes than to your starters. And it's you have to have a balance in that, because, you cannot put all your energy into the substitutes, because you have to prepare your starting lineup. And I think that's one thing is very important for a coach, but as a team, at Arsenal, at Barcelona, at Rangers, with the national team, I always felt that everyone was going the same way.
Including fans. That's important, isn't it? To send the right message and to, I don't want to say manipulate, but to actually get the fans on board.
Yeah, it is, yeah, because, you know, I think the fans, they want to support their club, and they want to see that you are playing the way which suits the club you're in. I mean, it's and that, you know, the way we played with Arsenal, you know, with a lot of movement, with a lot of passing, with a lot of intelligence in the team. You know, people like to see that because it suited Arsenal. You know, with Barcelona, we were brought up 4-3-3. Spanish players were brought up, players who came in. We knew our system, you know. We knew we could enjoy the football, and make sure that you play the Barcelona way, and we did. You know, I came in 2003. They had some bad years before. You remember with the bicycle kick of Rivaldo that they were qualified for the UEFA Cup, not even the Champions League. And after that, you know, we started the season, you know, not really good. You know, Frank Rijkaard in my first season in November, already, you know, on the brink of getting fired. And then after that, we had a run till the end of the season where we won all of our games. became second and qualified for the Champions League, and that really started, you know, the rise of the Barcelona way.
So you've been to all these clubs, and we're talking about fans. They create an atmosphere, of course. So you've been at Old Firm, you've been at a Clásico, you've been at a Spurs Arsenal. Which one is more electric, or which one brings more memories?
I think all of them. I think it's great to play those games and to understand what it means to the fan. And you have to take that on the pitch, because if I ask a Rangers fan what is the biggest game in the world, and he would say the Old Firm, you know, the same for Barcelona and Madrid fans, or Arsenal, Tottenham, Feyenoord, Ajax. And I think it's very important for the team to know what the game means. And in all those games I played, you know, I knew what it meant for the club and for the fans. I think that's the most important way. But if you see, you know, I think El Clásico is one of the biggest games, rivalries in the world, because I think the whole world is watching that game. Mm-hmm. And that makes that game, I think, very special.
We're talking about Patrick Vieira, going back to the front three now, which I'll announce them, but we'll talk about them in a minute. Messi, Bergkamp and Ronaldinho, of course. But Patrick Vieira and you look, to me, like Arsenal managers. People that have got a special way of playing the game, of behaving, I think this is important, of relating to the club and the fans. Who's going to get there first?
I don't know. But yeah, it's as you said, it's. I think Patrick is also a player, you know, who's taking the first steps in managing a team, managing a club. For me, it's the same. And, you know, I can only speak for myself. But, you know, as a player, you know, I had dreams. You know, dreams in the career I had. And as a coach, you know, I have the same. You know, every coach wants to be involved in the big competitions. I think my ambition is clear, but, you know, I also know that in football you can have ambitions, but eventually it will. You never know how your career will proceed, but... You know,
but it is an ambition to manage.
It is
Arsenal and Barcelona as well.
I think I always say if I get one of the clubs I had, you know, abroad as a manager, it would be really nice. But you know, it's also, you know, and as a football player, you have a career, you sign a contract, and as a coach, you also know that you are successful today, and tomorrow you can be fired. I mean, that's also the life of a manager. And for me, it doesn't change the way I work, doesn't change how I see my future. You know, I just enjoy the day and work hard for tomorrow, and we'll see what happens.
You can only worry about the things you can control. You cannot worry about
yes,
things that
and as a manager, you can control a lot, but not everything.
I think I'm going to go to Messi last.
Yeah.
But first, Bergkamp. Elegance, right choices. That's the thing people forget. It's not just that he looks really good when he touches the ball. He chooses the right decision most of the time. Is that how his main strength?
I think he has the same, because his technical ability, his vision, and his knowing your surrounding. I think he was excellent. Because, you know, I of course I saw Dennis playing a lot with Ajax, but eventually training with him with the national team and later with Arsenal every day. And I think in football you could see the potential and how good players are when you train with them. And I had that same with Bergkamp.
He seems very quiet. I don't know if off the pitch he was somebody that, you know, just did his job and that's about it. Was that what it was?
No, he was. I was sharing the room with him at Arsenal, and I think Dennis is one of the guys who is, as you said, you know, on the pitch he's very very strict, you know, always serious. But I think he's one of the players outside of the pitch. Off the pitch, he's quite funny, and people don't know that side of him. But I
tell us a story of his.
No, because you know, it was always funny making fun of each other, of his teammates, of Patrick, always laughing about Patrick, or Pires, of Henry, and that was Dennis. And but he could, you know, he could tell things where 5 seconds you're thinking, is he serious, or is he making a joke, or is he serious? You know, kind of dark humor, and that's what Dennis had, and I always had fun with him. Yeah.
Did you ever have to drive him a long way?
No, because I always drove with him to the stadium. But you know, I could remember playing against Roma. I think he once went by car to Italy, and he didn't play. I think he didn't play any minute.
Was he happy over that?
I don't know, but he was. I think he was okay with it. You know, because you know he didn't. Go into the plane, and he was always by car, and everyone knew it. And for us wasn't a big thing.
A wonderful night's work from Arsenal, and it's not finished yet because Dennis Bergkamp has put his stamp on the evening in the grand manner.
Ever wondered what it's like to play with arguably the greatest ever footballer? Coming up on Inside Football, Gio van Bronckhorst tells us what it's like to line up alongside Lionel Messi. This is Inside Football with Guillem Balague and a special guest, Giovanni van Bronckhorst.
Minutes away from an audience with the special one. And I just wonder whether he'll want to try to change and look at this game now. Terry's header only as far as Iniesta. Now Ronaldinho. Oh, it's a terrific goal! Wonderful, wonderful goal! Absolutely breathtaking. Ronaldinho, you just didn't see it coming. Blink of an eye, back of the net. Petr Cech never moved. I mean, before you even blink, it's in the back of the net. That is absolutely outrageous. That's why he's World Player of the Year.
Next, Ronaldinho. You talked about that season where everything seemed to go pear-shaped for Barcelona. Edgar Davids comes in. Everything kind of settles a little bit. You change formation. But it was that famous game at midnight against Sevilla in which he scored from, like, I don't know, 40 metres, whatever it was. What do you remember of that particular game?
I don't remember the game because I didn't play in that game. Because there was a lot of talk about the game because...
And you were with the national side?
Yeah. I think we had to play with the national team because they wanted the game on Monday, I think.
It was about the amount of time you had to give between playing the previous game and giving time to the national side. So they decided to play it at midnight, just before midnight.
Yeah, 5 past midnight, because that counted as the next day.
Yes.
I think it was Tuesday, and they played on Monday, 5 minutes past midnight. And I remember that the Dutch players weren't involved, because we were already with the national team. And I couldn't see the game, because it wasn't on TV. And of course, after I saw the game where he scored, you know, the dribble, and he scored maybe from, I don't know, 50 yards or 40 yards. And... it was I think it ended 1-1, and it was I think one of the first times you could see and the Barcelona and the Nou Camp saw what Ronaldinho was capable of
on the pitch. We've all seen it. He was a legend. Perhaps he only picked for a year and a half, 2 years, the special Ronaldinho, including being clapped at the Santiago Bernabeu.
I mean, I think people always ask me who was better, you know, Messi, Ronaldinho, who was the better player. But I think they're both magnificent. But I think Ronaldinho was, for me, he was magic. Because you never knew what he was going to do. And with Messi, in his way, sometimes you could see what he's going to do. And he does it. But Ronaldinho, you never knew. He always told me, you know, when I have the ball, you keep running. Keep making the space, and then I can give it to you. Or I can go by myself. and I knew, you know, I was making the space for him. But I knew that he would change the game.
And he was always with a smile. And he wasn't a fake smile, was it?
No, he was always laughing. And I remember sometimes we would see each other... at the airport, Barcelona, you know, he was traveling to Brazil. I was traveling with my family to Holland. And, you know, of course, a lot of people around him, but he always took time, you know, to say hi to my kids and to say hi to my wife. And then, you know, that was the player he was. You know, he was, you know, for me, playing with him in front of me, you know, it was a dream, because I could play the ball to him and then I go make my runs, and I knew I would get the ball back, or he would score, or he give the ball an assist. And for me, it's he was one of the best players to have in front of me.
Why didn't Ronaldinho stay longer at the top?
I don't know. You know, maybe it's also, as you said, it's very hard to come to the top or to stay at the top. It's very difficult, especially with players like Ronaldinho, Messi, Ronaldo, you know, the really top players. And that's why it's so good to see and you know, I admire, you know, Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, how many years they are in the top of their game, and that doesn't come by itself. It's hard work for it, you know, and make sure you're living the best you can.
For the Messi biography that I wrote, I spoke to Ronaldinho, and he told me of that first training session when Leo came and did a couple of things in it after the rondos, after the pigs in the middle. There were a small game, and he did a couple of things. And Ronaldinho told Deco, "This is the guy that's going to take my number one place." And at the time, Ronaldinho was the best player in the world, as in bar none.
Yeah, I remember. I was with the national team, and they were playing Porto. They took all the players who are with the national team, weren't playing that game, but they took Messi as well from Barca C at the moment. And I remember Henk ten Cate phoning me after the game and telling me, you know, we now have a talent. It's unbelievable, he said. Mm-hmm. And they substituted everyone, and he was the only one on the bench. And then Henk said against Frank, well, give him 10 minutes because everyone played, give him 10 minutes. And then he people were like, well, who is this? And I remember in training, as you said, you know, one of the first times he trained, and he was playing against Motta. And Motta was really struggling for, and was a first team player. And Messi was all over him, you know, was going left, going right, you know, and everyone knew, well, who is this guy? And everyone knew this is something special.
Here's the free kick then for Barcelona, and it will be Messi along the ground. Absolutely stunning. The man is a master.
Luis Suarez brings it forward towards the edge of the penalty area. Here's Messi. Is this goal number 100 in the Champions League? Yes, it is.
And here he is again, moving into the box, going past the defender, leaving on his backside, chipping the goalkeeper and scoring a fantastic goal. What a finish from Lionel Messi. If there's a better player in the world, I've never seen him.
We knew he was something special, and we all felt like it was our duty to make sure that this is the player who will be, as you said, in the footsteps of Ronaldinho and the next star of Barcelona. And we knew that. Everyone knew that. So we all put energy in Leo.
Last two. We got to the World Cup final. You captained Holland that day. I remember talking to you after the World Cup final. You were obviously frustrated. It could have been completely different.
It could, yeah.
I would just watch last week the final again. You know, I'm just scared of the day Robin actually scores, because he could have twice. What memories have you got of that game?
I think two moments will stand out from that game in the second half. Is one was, I think, the pass to Robin, you know, where he could have scored, and also the moment that Arjen went through and Puyol, you know, he fouled him, mm-hmm. and he went down, and then he stood up again, and I think that's the moment where Puy would have gotten his second yellow. But you know, I also asked Arjen why he didn't lay down, because it was a foul. He said, "Yeah, but the goal was so close." You know, I said, I sensed at that moment that I could have scored, and really that was lucky for Puyol. But you know, it was a close game. And especially when you're nearing the penalty,
did you think it of
Beltany kicks? Yeah, but you saw it's just a moment where you are not focused. The shape wasn't good, you know, Van der Vaart ending as a left back. So I think it's it was very close, that game.
Finally, I would like you to explain a moment in your career. I've got a suggestion, but you choose it, of course. One that you remembered a lot, told the story a lot, and put it in context. I'm thinking perhaps the goal in the World Cup against Uruguay, but you chose. Just tell us where it comes from, what happened, because you've got a good memory.
Every player has a moment in the career where people say, whoa, that was Sven Bronckhorst, or that was Ronaldinho. I think that goal was, for me, where people remind me of. And I remember the goal really clear, because a couple of months before that, I made the same goal against PSV in the Cup, exactly the same. But I remember getting the ball, I remember shooting the ball, and I remember the feeling when the ball went off my foot, and I remember total silence. When I shot the ball, it was like a movie where you shoot a ball and then the sound stops. And then, you know, you see the ball getting closer and closer to the goal, and the more you're thinking, it's going to be a goal, it's going to be a goal. And then the ball goes in, you know, in the top corner, and then the sound came up again.
Good possession from Holland. Van Bronckhorst! Oh! What a goal from the skipper! Fully 35 yards! A beautiful strike from Giovanni Van Bronckhorst!
It would be a waste to share so many experiences with so many big names of the game and not learn from it. But to actually take something from them, you have to be humble enough and have ears open to those influences. Gio Van Bronckhorst has certainly taken bits from everybody that taught him something. And what is more, he's liked in Glasgow, London, Rotterdam, Barcelona, and anywhere he has been, because he likes to listen, he's generous with his time, entertaining, and he's open to share what he knows too. He knows he has worked very hard to get to where he is, but also that he had the breaks that helped him get there. And did you notice? He has always a smile on his face, you can almost hear it. Gio is someone who embraces life and is not too obsessed with the destination, but enjoys every single minute of the life he has been handed. You have heard Inside Football with me, Guillem Balaguer, and Gio Van Bronckhorst. Hasta luego.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.